Hey, listeners, Tina here. I want to make sure you're getting the full value of the podcast on social media. Please give us a follow on Instagram at In The Sweet Pod for insights, tips, power quotes from all of our episodes that will absolutely rock your mind and rock your world. That's In The Sweet Pod on Instagram. Hope to see you there. Thanks again so much. Hi, this is Tina Powell, host of In the Suite, where I sit down with top women leaders and some of the biggest names in the financial services and the wealth management industry. Together, we'll discover some of their best secrets and top strategies to grow a great business, build a strong brand, and lead teams in the 21st century. I hope you'll enjoy hearing their amazing personal stories of triumph, trepidation, and transformation in hopes of becoming better leaders ourselves. The time for you to lead is now, and you're in the sweep. Meet Kate Asick, Chief Operating Officer of Timescale Financial, a financial planning and retirement plan advisory firm dedicated to helping people achieve and enjoy financial independence, however they define it. With offices in Danvers, Massachusetts, Newton, Massachusetts, and Reston, Virginia. Kate, inspired by Wall Street movies, jumped at the chance to become a stockbroker when she was young. But being a stockbroker made her realize that she didn't want to help people make money. Instead, what she wanted was to help them achieve their financial goals. Before joining Timescale Financial in 2014, Kate worked for some of the largest and most well-respected brands in the wealth management industry, namely Charles Schwab and Fidelity Investments, where she honed her leadership and operation skills and love of financial empowerment. In today's episode, you'll hear about Kate's inspirational rebrand of Timescale Financial, previously known as Coastal Capital Group, with the help of her next-gen team. After much reflection and research, Kate, the firm's CEO, Jim Horrocks, and their managing director of institutions, Neil Tremblay, selected the name Timescale Financial because it refers to the measurement of time that is synonymous with the industry standard for advisory partnerships. In fact, while many firms were pulling in during the pandemic, the Timescale Financial team was expanding to 19 people and adapted to a hybrid model of in-person and remote work. Along with the rebrand, Kate and the team has also coined the term Plan Empowered, which symbolizes and represents how they help individuals and businesses accomplish their unique financial goals, both at the individual and institutional level. Kate reveals that her multi-generational team is closely knit and generally cares for one another, reflecting and setting examples of their brand values and work ethics. One of the many gifts that you'll discover about Kate Asick in this amazing episode is how to foster a healthy work environment with NextGen and the importance of financial literacy. Kate's advice empowers us to be strong, confident, and independent at all stages of our career in the suite. Wow, Kate Asick, take a seat in the suite. It is so awesome to see you here. I'm so happy that we're doing this interview today. You look stunning. You look gorgeous.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. It's so exciting, right? Like, we're going to have such a great conversation. I wanted to dive right in. You're Chief Operating Officer at Timescale Financial. What an opportunity. I have seen you actually take this company, rebrand. This is a very powerful episode. If you want to learn anything about rebranding, if you're thinking of rebranding your firm, because Kate has done a masterful job. So tell us about your position right now at Timescale Financial.
Sure. I'm Chief Operating Officer, which really means that I'm the complement to Jim Horrocks, who's our CEO. And the reason I describe it that way is because wherever Jim is strong or focused, I tend to try to focus in areas where he can't. And in a small firm, you can certainly do that. So chief operating officer, yep, you oversee just about everything. So it's not just service and operations, technology, but it's also for us, it continues to be business development and relationship management. It's a phenomenal opportunity because it's a phenomenal firm. I really am so fortunate to be surrounded by soon to be 19 of the most fantastic people on the planet.
19, that is such a great number. And I've been to your office and it has been magical. Beautiful, beautiful space, by the way. I wouldn't think a wealth management office. It's so contemporary, such a modern kind of next gen feel. We're going to dive into the fact that you've got such a incredible multi-generational team over at Timescale Financial, which I think is really unique. Even more importantly was how you arrived at Timescale Financial, because that too has a little bit of a story. So tell us how you got there.
Sure. So I spent the better part of about 15 years working for both Charles Schwab and for Fidelity. I was so blessed to be able to have those opportunities as well. And after 15 years or so, you just get to the point where I did, where I just wanted to do something more entrepreneurial. And so I was then able to transition out. I joined a startup. It didn't last very long, but I had the good fortune to work with Charles Goldman and Steve Lockshin at a firm called Advisant. A fantastic experience. Again, we shut it down after probably 11, 12 months. But at that point, I was able to say, okay, I'm really able to go out on my own now. And so I launched my own consulting business, had the opportunity again to work with some fantastic firms. And that's where I met what used to be Coastal Capital Group and now Timescale Financial. So I met Jim Horrocks back in 2014, and I started consulting with them. And then 2 years later, I joined them as an employee.
I've got to give Jim Horrocks credit. One of the things, your experience is so powerful, that you've had the big brand experience with Fidelity and Schwab, and you've also too had that entrepreneurial experience with Advice, and certainly Steve Lockshin is doing such amazing, amazing things in the industry right now. Throughout your career, I feel that you've been surrounded by fantastic and great leadership. And one of the things that you also touched upon was that Timescale Financial was not Timescale Financial when you found it. You've gone through an incredible rebrand process. So I wanted to talk about the genesis of that. Going through a rebrand is really very painful. Okay, let's call it what it is. It's a digital transformation project that is not for the faint of heart. Not surprised at all that Kate, that you helped to champion that. So let's talk about the genesis of the rebrand.
Well, thank you. And I think you give me too much credit, because quite frankly, if I had known how much it was going to take, I'm not so sure I would have been as eager. I guess it took us 3 years. So I guess we have to go back to 2018. And our founder, who's since stepped away from the business, his name was Dave Caruso. And Dave actually created Coastal Capital Group probably now about 20 years or so ago. And so the name was really his. And oddly enough, we're not even located on the coast today, but when he came up with the name, he was. And so fast forward, we wanted to create a new website. And so we started talking so much about our value proposition and how we wanted to convey that to the marketplace. And we kind of kept coming back to, what is Coastal Capital Group anyways? It almost had like a regional connotation. And we're like, that's not what we want. When someone hears our name, we don't want them to think of a place necessarily. We want them to think of feelings that they have, right? That really have meaning and connection. And so Dave very graciously said, listen, it was a name back then. Let's go for it. And so with his blessing, we went forward, and it did take 3 years, three solid years.
Wow. I think to have the blessing of the original founder, who we should say is no longer a part of the business. So Coastal Capital Group. And again, just so everybody listening here knows where you are based, which is not on a coast or on a water. Can you tell a little bit about where you are in the U.S.?
Oh, sure. So we're located in Danvers, Massachusetts, which is about 15, 20 minutes north of Boston. We're actually not far from the coast. We're just not located on the coast, and you can't see water from our office. But it's a great spot. It's highly accessible and a really easy commute. Especially it's a reverse commute coming out of Boston. A lot of our younger team members live in the city, so it's been great.
You've since also, too, you've done a little bit of expansion this year, which I think is incredible during a pandemic to add on another office where a lot of firms are now kind of pulling in where you are branching out.
We had the opportunity to hire a relationship manager who is based in Reston, Virginia. The Mid-Atlantic is a very key market for us. We have client relationships and plans down there now. So it was just a wonderful opportunity to find someone with the talent and experience that Joe Yoon had. We also, most importantly, thought he was a great fit personality-wise with our team and really represented our values, our value proposition really well. So that was awesome. And so he's our first remote employee. And it just so happened that we were talking to him before the pandemic. So I think that just accelerated things. But yeah, it works great.
I think a lot of leaders now are open to talent that's not necessarily in their own backyard. And a lot of people had a myopic view because we were just trained in a traditional work environment that, yes, if you're coming to work, especially in financial services, where, let's face it, you depend upon conversations with other people, you depend a lot even on scanners and faxes and technology and multifunctional printers and the ability to see clients. So it very much is like a physical manifestation. Of course, with the pandemic that we've gone virtual and now we're transitioning into a hybrid role. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you're managing?
So let's see, that day, it was March 15th of 2020, and we had just hired our first chief compliance officer. His name is John Carey. JC started on the Monday of that week, and literally by Wednesday, we were brushing off our business continuity policy and ensuring that we were going to be able to take this business out of the office and go fully remote. And so that Friday was our last day in the office. From that point forward, and I should say, everything went unbelievably well. I think the biggest hindrance prior to that was the fear that clients wouldn't want to meet virtually, that clients would still want to meet face to face whenever they could. And I think that there's always going to be a subset of people that would have preferred that, but the pandemic pushed us, right, to leverage Zoom or GoToMeeting and to figure out that, you know what, this is a near perfect substitution. It's not perfect, but it's near perfect enough. And as a result, once I think the world saw that client and advisor relationships could not just be sustained, but continue to thrive, I think that everything at that point was going to be just fine. As a result, we fast forward now, our technology and systems, everything worked so unbelievably well. We allowed our team to go into the office when they wanted to. We did have a few that probably went in quite frequently, but other than that, everybody pretty much stayed out. And then I would say this summer, we made the determination that we were going to bring the team back 2 days a week post Labor Day. And so every Tuesday and Wednesday now, all 19 of us are in the office and we work remotely Monday, Thursday, Friday. Of course, we see clients, you know, by appointment whenever they need to, want to, et cetera. But it's been so fantastic, Tina. It's so great to see everybody again. You forget the little nuances or quirks that people have, right? You forget the little things that made you laugh or even frustrated you, quite frankly. And the reason we decided that we were going to transition to a hybrid model is because work from home worked really well, but we hired 3 people during the pandemic, and it made us really look at how are we going to preserve the culture that we work so hard to build and foster every single day? And that's hard to do over Zoom. And that's why I say it's not a complete substitution or a perfect substitution. And it's been fantastic. So we feel like 2 days a week is enough in the office of interaction. It really is enhancing or reinvigorating those relationships. Collaboration is through the roof, and particularly for our newer team members, I think they've assimilated really quickly. So it feels like a home run.
I think it is a total home run. I mean, why wouldn't you want to kind of co-create that experience and make it more collaborative with the people that are with your talent and with your team, especially if it supports your culture, like you've done at Timescale Financial. And one of the things that I've witnessed is, Kate, I've literally had conversations, literally, that some companies are having a hard time. Now, I know a part of this is the pandemic, right? The after effects of getting people to work. But you've got 19 people who are happy to come to work. And not only that your team reflects a multi-generational component that other business leaders would love to have some of that formula. It was one of the things that really impressed me.
Well, I think that because of the pandemic, there is legitimate fear in the marketplace. So many people really don't want to go into an office. Many people don't want to leave, right? Their home or kind of the little bubble that they've created. And I respect that. Furthermore, though, from a business owner perspective, there's also potential liability and things like, you know, we were faced with taking temperatures every day, recording temperatures. And now suddenly I'm like, am I keeping medical records? And this is not the business that I want to be in. And I think that not just financial services, but many industries were faced with that. So there is a small risk in going back into the office, but we felt like it was well worth the risk because that's what we felt was going to be best for our business, our clients, and our team. So from that perspective, I don't want to say it was an easy decision. There was a lot of thoughtfulness put into it, but the decision was actually quite obvious. So we get here. Yes, we're on hybrid, but we just hired a person, and I can't tell you how few candidates were interested when they found out that even 2 days a week you had to come into the office. So it's kind of a mixed bag, Tina. You hear, for example, that like Morgan and Goldman Sachs, they're requiring everyone in their New York office to be present in the New York office, right? And that's 5 days a week. So I feel like I'm striking a great.
Oh, I do. I'm like 2 days a week. That to me sounds like the best world. People that legitimately want to come in and see each other and just like, hey, I want to see your face.
That's the best part of our team, though. We legitimately like and care about one another. And it's very rare when you can say that about everybody that you work with. Now, please, I acknowledge, you know, it's less than 20 people. It's not like I've got an organization of 2,000, but it's still even at 19, it's something that we so enjoy, we're so proud of, and as a result, we're very protective of it.
So what do you see that's really working besides the flexibility to be open to a hybrid model that your awesome team of people are saying, how do you build that inside?
I think everything starts with purpose. What is your purpose? And I don't necessarily mean just mine, but I'm talking about the business, the firm's purpose. Everything needs to be aligned around that. And that includes our team. And so when you start there and everyone's aligned, right, with that purpose and the mission, and then you start to say, okay, so are we accountable? Do we hold ourselves to the highest standards of integrity? Do we trust and respect one another? And then when you get beyond those core values, then it's about, we take our work so seriously, but we try not to take ourselves too seriously. And this is also a group, like you were saying, we've got kids in their 20s, we've got people in their 30s, 40s, 50s. But the best part about it is, everybody's a professional, but yet everyone wants to have fun. So socially, like, we're a really tight-knit group as well. And when prospective employees see it and they hear it, they want it. And so what I would say is, be really true to your mission. Align everyone around that. Make sure that core values, to the best of your ability, right, really do represent what you want your firm, or how you want your firm to be represented. Have you ever sat down and just to envision, what do you really want, like, a day in the life of the firm to look like and feel like? Because if you can actually see that, it's much easier then to start writing down the attributes or the features or the core values that you then need, that you'll require in each and every next prospective employee.
And when you went through that kind of, even that exercise with the rebrand, right, you came up with your core values, you came up with a tagline, your decision to name Timescale Financial was really important. And I think you hit upon a really important point, Kate, that as you're thinking about what your purpose is and what you stand for, it has to be aligned everywhere. It has to be aligned to the brand, to the marketing, to the client experience, to the technology, to the how you work with the decisions that you make on behalf of the team. Can you share with us a little bit about some of the work that you did internally about getting to those brand values? I mean, you just didn't randomly pick a name out of the hat and have a cute computer generated. Like, one of the best qualities, I think, about leaders, and you exude this, Kate, you believe in Timescale Financial like a religion.
Yes. And it's interesting. I heard when you were speaking with Heather Fortner from Signature FD, I heard her say that someone recently told her, make sure you're the same person in all facets of your life. So you can't be someone different when you go to work and then become someone different when you go home. And that stopped me in my tracks. It's really got me thinking, and I'm hoping to iterate on that. But with that said, Timescale, when we started out, we went to, okay, so we know what we don't want, right? We don't want to be remembered for some geographic location. So what do we want? And who are we? And what do we really want clients and prospects in the marketplace to connect with? And we kept coming back to redefine the standard. Jim Horrocks has been in the business for 25 years now in providing financial planning for individuals and families and doing it really well. He does it. He created a system that is very purpose-driven. It's always, always, always about a client's goals, needs. What are you trying to accomplish, fix, and avoid? And keeping it simple. And he really believed that the industry as a whole didn't do a good job. So he always saw himself as the challenger of the status quo. So we set forth with our marketing firm at that time. And as a matter of fact, after lots and lots of iterations, they came back with a number of different choices. But the one that really stood out was Atomic Clock Partners. And we were just like, whoa. Whoa, because if you really think about the meaning, the atomic clock is the standard in timekeeping. It is the most precise timekeeping across the globe. The problem for us was atomic has lots of negative connotation. And we were just like, I don't think that's quite it. We love the meaning. We just couldn't get past that name. So in that conversation, one of the marketing consultants used the term, as he was trying to describe it, and almost like talk us into it a bit, the atomic clock timescale. And he referenced that a couple times. And I stopped him and I was like, what's a timescale? And he's like, oh, well, it's a unit of measurement of time that matters to you. So for example, if you go to your Outlook calendar right now and you click on view, one of the options is time scale. When you click on time scale, what happens is you get choices. Do you want to see your calendar in a day view, a week view, a month view, a year view? So that a time scale is the period of time, the measurement of time that matters to you. And we were just like, wow, something. So we did some more research around definitions and uses and try to apply it in a different way. And we just loved it because it was still a standard, right? The atomic clock time scale, but it was also that now that personal unit of time, right? To you. So Tina, what's your time scale? When we're talking about reaching financial goals, what's your time scale? And we just, like I said, and then time is such an important element in any planning relationship. And so we were off to the races.
I think it's brilliant. I know a lot of things that you also stand for is the idea of literacy and education. How's that working for you? And what are you doing? How are you actually manifesting that at Timescale Financial?
Well, thank you. We believe that it is core to anyone's success. If you really want to empower someone, we believe it starts with education, because education is the nugget, right? That becomes the foundation that you can build your confidence on in order to start taking action, right? And when you feel confident, you're empowered, right? I'm confident to take action. You're now empowered. And that is the greatest gift and our primary intention with everybody that we meet. And so we also, as you mentioned, we have an institutional business whereby we serve as an advisor to about 110 retirement plans right now. And so one of our core offerings is employee guidance. So we use our relationship managers to actually deliver education, financial literacy across a number of different personal finance topics and every single day. As a matter of fact. And so we do it because it's important to us, so much so we've made it part of our offering. And I wanted to share a really quick example with you about how this also has manifested itself. So because so many of the people, particularly within our retirement plans, really were hungry for the education knowledge and then even our advice, we decided to launch an offering that catered to what the industry would call next gen. Oftentimes, though, we call it starting out and starting over, right? And so literally, if you don't have a single dollar to manage, but you're willing to pay the subscription-based fee to engage in a financial planning relationship with us, whereby we can help you along your financial journey, awesome. We're all about it. And literally, you don't need to have a single dollar other than what, you know, the willingness to pay the fee. So that we felt really strong about as well. We launched that about 2.5 years ago. And it's really gotten some traction. And the beautiful part about it is how we can help people that really are just starting out or they're starting over. And it's a little bit different than helping someone who's already accumulated wealth. But with that said, so one of the plan participants heard one of our relationship managers do a presentation. I don't recall the topic at this time, but budgeting had to be part of the conversation. So this young man who was in his early 20s came up to us and said, listen, my mom is going through a divorce right now, and she is in a ton of debt and has some other issues and has nobody to talk to. And myself, my brother, and my sister, who are also in their 20s, are helping her pay her bills. Could we have a meeting with you? And so we said, of course. She came in on a Saturday, met with our CEO and another woman by the name of Kamei Pascucci, who's a relationship manager as well. And the four of them, the mom and the three 20-year children in their 20s, talked about where they are, where the challenges are, and why they were in the situation they were in. And we took them on pro bono, as a matter of fact. And the mom, much to her credit, though, she really embraced the process. She exercised incredible discipline. She got a part-time job. She wiped out $60,000 worth of debt. And so now the only debt that she has is a used car loan. And she sent us the sweetest note just the other day, telling us about her success, thanking us and asking if she could pay us. And it was the most heartwarming note. And absolutely. And so, you know, of course, we said, no, this is our payment. This is it right here. Watching you be empowered. Be empowered, taking control of your financial life, understanding, right, the implications, right, of each decision you make, how it impacts something else in your financial life. And she's probably more confident than she's ever been in her entire life. It was awesome.
I have to say, Kate, that's probably one of the most amazing stories that we've had here in the suite about the power of financial planning and having a team of people. But here's also too, what I see is that the CEO comes in on a Saturday, and so does the relationship manager, and you're coordinating and you're there. There's so many people at work that actually touch this relationship, and you're willing to do it for the love of doing it and not because you're getting paid to do it. That it's just a pay it forward type of principle, which I think is a really, this is a very inspiring story, right? You don't need an FPA pro bono day, volunteer day to exercise and to do that process. When it's one of the things I love about planning, right? And this industry, when you affect one life, and in this case, you use the example of a woman who's divorced, who's in debt, one life transformed affects everyone else that touches that life. That is plan empowered. Let's talk a little bit about not only how financial services can be a powerful transformation tool for women, for next gen, for career changers. I mean, you've hired at Timescale Financial, and this is especially for the people listening right now. Give this industry the consideration that it deserves.
It started a very, very long time ago for me. The first thing I would say is that growing up, I'm the oldest of four children, and my parents both worked. My mom often worked a second job or definitely did overtime if she could as things came up. So her work ethic was just like I couldn't even touch it. But just being able to see that every single day. And really the only thing she would ever say to me is like, if you want something, you have to go and work for it. No one is going to give it to you. So fast forward, I see the movie Wall Street sometime before I got to college. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is it. I'm going to help people, but I'm going to help people by being a stockbroker. That way, I mean, I can participate in all this excitement. I have the opportunity to make unbelievable money. And yeah, there's some power associated with that too. I'm like, what's not to love? So I went to college, I became an econ major, and I graduated. And the entire time I was hell-bent on becoming a stockbroker. So got a job as a stockbroker. I didn't recognize it at the time. I was the only female in the entire firm of 30 people. I didn't recognize it though. I do now looking back. What I definitely recognized though was the environment, right? How people spoke to clients and the value they were delivering. We shorted stocks. We shorted generic pharmaceuticals, to be even more specific. So something was down 2 points, we were out. And I'm like, this is not what I thought it was going to be. As a matter of fact, I'm like, I'm not delivering any value whatsoever here. I'm like, so I left that firm and I actually ended up joining an independent RIA firm that had a financial planning group in it. And I was the salesperson or the business development person inside of that little group. I had no idea at the time what an RIA was. As a matter of fact, I kept asking the woman I worked for why she didn't have a Series 7. She had a CFP, she had an MST, she had a JD, but I'm like, why don't you have, didn't you need that license? And she's like, no, because what we're advisors, right? We help to coordinate. We're like outsourced CFOs for very wealthy families. And so it was the beginning of my education. What the job as a broker taught me is everything that I didn't want to be. And so I describe it as my worst job, but it was my greatest experience. And it really, from that point, it set me on a path whereby I was now not looking to help people make money. I was going to help people reach their financial goals. It sounded subtle at the time, but looking back, that was transformational. And really, that's what led me to, I applied to both Schwab and Fidelity, and it's just that Schwab hired me first.
Hey, listeners, we want to thank our friends over at Redtail CRM for helping us to manage all things possible here in the suite. Redtail Technology is the industry leader in software for CRM, document imaging, and email solutions for financial advisors. Visit redtailtechnology.com to check them out.
You spent some incredible years both at Schwab and Fidelity on the sales side, on the business development side, helping other firms to build great businesses. Was there anything that you saw in your experiences from working on that side of the industry that you take with you today?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, when you're starting out, as a general rule, you don't know what you don't know. I didn't know what an RIA was. I didn't know what a custodian was. I didn't know what a broker dealer was. I guess I knew what a bank was. And so again, those early years are so formative, and I would suggest to any professional, be a sponge. But what I did see, and what I didn't get to the answer for my last question, was that financial services, once I got inside of a very large organization, I saw all different kinds of roles. I saw you could be a branch manager, which was definitely a little bit more rigid or structured, I should say, or you could be in operations, right? You could be in product management. You could be in technology, compliance, goes on and on. And it was eye-opening for me. And so I would say to any young professional, but particularly a young woman who wants to have a family, financial services is such a wonderful industry to join. First of all, it's purpose-driven, right? What is more noble or awesome, right, than being able to help people, right, reach their financial goals? I just, in and of itself, I find that so enlightening, so energizing, right? To be able to get up every day and know that I'm going to make a difference, that is, it's, first of all, it's a non-starter. My job, my career had to be about that. But the second thing I saw is if you kind of went the business development route, you likely would have more flexibility and more upside, right, for compensation, right? Because, and I personally love that. I'm like, so you're saying my activities and my success are directly going to impact my take-home pay? Sign me up. So again, I just for a working mom or a working parent, I think there's so much power in that kind of role inside of our industry. I think it's awesome.
You hit upon something really important, and that is that we can rid ourselves of the idea that, oh, if I'm in financial services, that I have to be really great in math, that there's technology, there's marketing, there's operations, there's relationship management. You just have to have a willingness to want to be good and help people.
Absolutely. And be curious, right? You want to, again, work hard, right? And try to educate yourself as much as you possibly can. Take everything in. Talk to the people all around you, because they could be some of your greatest resources. Actually, that's what I found in the larger firms, is the people and perspective part, right? You don't necessarily get that in a small firm per se, but boy, in a large organization with 25,000-50,000 people, oh yeah. So you'd be crazy. Keep your ears open, ask great questions, right? And work really hard. But then the next thing that I would say, and I think this is just as important, you can't sit back and wait for something to be given to you. So if you're working really hard and you believe that you've earned the opportunity for that promotion, right, or to transition into yet a completely different job, raise your hand and ask. And if you're told no, listen to the reason and be honest with yourself. Is there truth in that? Am I overestimating my abilities or my skill set or even my effort? And if the answer is yes, okay, well then now you know what you need to do. But if the answer is no, I would suggest you probably then should look to another firm. You should probably leave. And this is that whole part about my career path has been anything but linear. But one thing I knew is that when I got to those milestones, if you would, I would then go to a different firm if I saw that the opportunity that I thought I was ready for and I couldn't get here, I would take it. And so although I kept advancing, it wasn't necessarily a straight line.
So Kate, so one of the things that I wanted to ask you is someone that has had experience in multiple types of organizations within financial services, have there been any lessons that you can impart? Were there any takeaways from that job experience that before Timescale Financial that we can all put in our own career playbooks?
Oh, yes. Lots of years, so lots of examples, I'm sure. I guess the first thing I would say is no matter where you are, large or small, surround yourself with great people at all levels and be curious. But the most important thing is work hard. Work hard and don't wait for opportunities to come to you, whether it's a project that you are really passionate about and you'd like to lead it, you should ask, is it a promotion? If you're working hard and contributing value and you believe that this is your time for that opportunity, you should ask. But when you ask, based on the answers that you receive, make sure you're being honest with yourself. Take that into consideration, take it to heart. And really dig in and say, is my manager right? Is there truth in what she's saying? And if so, then you have your answer. You know what you need to work on. If you still believe, though, that the answer is no, you may then want to consider an opportunity at a different firm. And again, I'm not advocating job hopping, but what I am saying is oftentimes you come to a fork in the road where you're like, I just believe that for the contribution value I'm making now, I may be better served in a different organization. But regardless of what it is, I think what I've learned is work really hard, but don't sit back and wait for something to come to you.
I know you have some other philosophies too, because look, you're working with a Jim Horrocks and a Neil Tremblay, who are the other partners of your firm. And it is a male dominated industry. And you have the ability to see great leadership and form your own kind of key philosophies around what makes for good leaders. And I think that it's part culture. It's that culture part that you're talking about. Certainly working hard is. And I can't help, Kate, but look in back of you and there's a sign that says, work hard, dream big. And then there's a clock there. I'm like, wow. And family pictures, like all of the common themes that we're talking about. But what do you think in terms of like, what do you think about your key business philosophies in leadership?
Have an opinion. Mm. Don't be afraid to voice it. With that said, positioning is everything. So I have had the amazing fortune of working under some of the industry's greatest leaders. Early on, I worked directly for John Bunch, who went on to become head of TD Ameritrade Retail, then the mutual fund store, and most recently at Edelman Financial Engines. And then it was Steve Lockton and Charles Goldman, Bob Oros. Notice too that none of them were female, but they all had something in common, which was number one, an incredibly purpose-driven, articulate about what the purpose or the mission is, so that everybody always knew why we were moving in a certain direction. And then that fearlessness, it seemed like fearlessness anyways. And I'm sure if I sat down and I asked them in the way, way back machine, maybe they felt like it just wasn't a choice, or maybe they're just like, it's okay, because if I fail, I'll have the opportunity to learn from that. But it seemed like fearlessness. And so what I took from that was always have an opinion, but always be able to position it in a way where it's a conversation and it's not an argument. Right? So it doesn't have to be my opinion is counterposed to yours. It's just an alternative to consider. And it took me a while to develop that skill. But once I was able to do it, it was met with a lot of success. It doesn't mean that my opinion's always right. But when you're sitting at a table and important decisions are to be made, people want to know. They actually want to know what you have to say. They may not always ask you, but they do, because it's this collaboration of ideas, right, that makes for better results. And so I think that and then not being afraid to fail. Now, again, no one sets out going, I'm going to fail, but you can't let the fear of it hold you back to the point that you're not even going to try.
I'm trying to get better at the skill you just kind of talked about, to just contribute the ideas and not to just view it as a conversation. What have you done that successfully that has worked, regardless of where I am, if I'm an entry level, if I'm a mid-career? I want to just say, I myself have found myself in situations prior where you have been afraid to be that lonely voice in the room. Anything that you've seen that has really worked well along those lines about voicing how you feel, showing up with a point of view that doesn't put your manager at ease, that you can put in a very safe space?
Well, I think it really starts from within you. Yeah. Are you looking to play win-win versus are you looking to play simply to be heard and to make sure that it's your opinion, recommendation, whatever it might be, is the one that's taken? Because if you're playing that way, well, then you are going to isolate people for sure. I mean, it hands down, it's going to happen. But instead, if you walk into a situation and you're really looking to drive to a better outcome, well, then your opinion matters. Right. And it could be, it may be counterposed to someone, or it may be complementary to somebody else's. And again, this is why I say positioning. It's so important. It's so important. But it does start from within. And I have seen people along the way that, like sharks, right? Like, oh my, you know, like it's their way or the highway. And and oftentimes they're not going to be told no, kind of thing. But I would say more often than not, it's a collaborative environment, which is why your voice matters, right? Because if you're, like I said, if you're trying to get to a better outcome, then it's a collection of ideas, right? And it's everybody's input that will drive those better results. And it's a shame, because to think that there are so many great minds, so many awesome ideas or insights that may never be heard because... Why? Because you don't have the confidence to speak up, or because you're afraid that you won't be taken seriously? I mean, listen, we've all been there. It's just a matter of, can you progress beyond that? And some of it is a self-confidence. And this is what I would say to anybody that's listening. And it's similar to my other philosophy. Don't wait for things to come to you. You need to ask. But with that said, bet on you. Bet on you. Because the truth of the matter is, if you don't have confidence in you, it's going to be really difficult for anybody else to consistently bet on you. So start with yourself.
That is golden, Kate. Bam. Bet on you. I love it. I want to have like shirts made. I want to start this whole social media campaign. And one of the things that we really haven't gotten a chance to talk about, and our time is wrapping up here, but I do want to commend you on your use of social media. You've done all of the things right on the rebrand, the new website. Now you have Instagram. I think it's really important, if we're going to touch that next generation, these are the kinds of key philosophies, the bet on you. What a phenomenal, phenomenal message to take with you. there's a way to approach these conversations, even just to have a philosophy or something written and to hand it to your boss and say, you know, we had this great meeting. I was really intrigued. I was really inspired. Oh, by the way, over the weekend, I was just coming up with some ideas. Maybe there'll be a value. Here's a five pager on what my brain was so busy this weekend, right? There's ways to bet on you without stepping on everybody else to do it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so getting back to social media, though, first of all, I just want to thank the entire C-suite social media team for helping us get into the realm of social media. It was really important to us, to the brand, to make sure that we were on the platforms where our clients, our partners, and our prospects are, number one. And then number two, we want to be relevant. And what a better way to do that? We've got lots of new messaging, right? Branding and content to share. So it's been an awesome opportunity. It's been eye-opening for sure. And we're just getting started. But I just wanted to say thank you to your team and for helping us every step of the way.
Thank you. That was totally, totally unexpected. And yes, in full transparency, we are working with Kate and Timescale Financial. This was in no means meant to be any type of self-promotion. But I will take kudos for the team because they've worked really hard. And I want this to just be a message. If you are trying to reach people right now, you have to reach them where they are. And podcasting, social media, Instagram, TikTok, not yet for the industry. We haven't really seen that, although everyone is on TikTok. You'll love this. I went to buy the Clinique Black Sugar, the certain lipstick. They were literally sold out of it because of a TikTok campaign. They're like, that is blowing up right now, Black Sugar. I mean, that's the power of social media, how it's just causing us to think differently, make different lifelong decisions. But I really like to see great work being championed in the feed and social and reaching the people that matter. You and I are both, we share the same kind of enthusiasm and love for next gen and want to see more younger people and more women particularly enter the industry. So kudos to you for that. So do you have any last minute success tips for people coming into the industry? I just love to hear your final thoughts on that.
Let's see. Beyond what I've already shared, I think that being authentic and being accountable, people will see through you eventually if you're not being true to yourself. And so that authenticity to me, though, isn't just about being real, but it's also about being accessible and relatable. So I think that's incredibly important, regardless of your age or your level in an organization or industry. And then, like I said, accountability. There is nothing more, what's the word I'm looking for? More attractive than when you see somebody make a mistake, completely own it. Completely own it.
100%.
They never point a finger. And it's always about my bad.
Yep.
And then there's almost this immediate, this is what I could have done or should have done better. And I will the next time. And you probably don't see that mistake again. It's accountability is unbelievably powerful.
Gosh, I love it. Great, great advice. Okay. Best way to get in touch with you, Kate.
Let's see. So I got my first cell phone back in 2007. And so I've had the same cell phone number since then. So anyone could reach me on my cell phone at 508-521-4217 or via email at kasak@timescalefinancial.com.
You have been a great, great guest. I really enjoyed the tips that you provided. I think that they resonate with people at different stages of their career. I think anybody can take what we've learned today from you, Kate, and apply it to their life. So I hope that everyone, that you take these philosophies and you take these tips and you bring them into your own life. You provided us with such a gift today. Congratulations on all of your success at Timescale Financial. We're thrilled, thrilled to have welcomed you in the suite. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you, Tina. It takes a village.
You're listening to In the Suite, a podcast that shares amazing stories of women and men in business, in the financial services and the wealth management industry. Our producers are Tina Powell and Kevin Hirshhorn. Our editor at large is Kevin Hirshhorn. Our content writers are Dipal Rashandani and Tina Powell. Research and technical assistance is Daniel Rosenfeld. And social media content creator is our own Danny Wheeler. In the Suite podcast is sponsored by C-Suite Social Media, a high-performance marketing agency for RIAs and fintech companies in wealth management industry. You can visit csuitesocialmedia.com to learn more. And thank you so much for listening and subscribing. We've got listeners in 1,011 cities and 54 countries as of today. Wow. We are so inspired. We are so grateful to you, especially for the 5-star reviews. This podcast was inspired by you and created for you to lead boldly. So please let us know how you enjoyed this episode with the amazing Kate Asick and share your thoughts on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, hashtag In the Suite. You can connect with Kate on LinkedIn and visit her firm's Instagram and website at timescalefinancial.com. And always, if you would like to share the name of a rock star woman or man in the financial services industry we should interview in 2022, please send it to me at tina@inthesuitepodcast.com and we will consider it. Again, thank you so much for listening and subscribing and being part of In the Suite.